When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Forever Dog.
Do not go gentle into that good night.
Poetry, I feel, is a tyrannical discipline.
I was trying to tell a story.
The book came to me in a sort of a haze.
This is how to write a good short story.
No hope, just booze and madness.
Everyone in the world has gone to bed one night or another with fear.
I saw the best minds of my generation destroyed by madness.
Now, lend me your ears.
Hello, and welcome to Literati, a podcast about books and the idiots who write them.
We, as always, are your faithful hosts. I'm Michael the Fox Wolf.
And I'm Colin, the insert nickname here, O'Brien. Now, it's no secret that Michael and I are extremely well-read and very smart.
You know, that's very true, and it isn't a secret. You can ask anybody, and if you do insist on asking someone to verify that claim, please let that someone be one of us.
Yeah, we've found that with regards to that particular claim of us being smart and well-read, once you start asking people who are not one of the two of us to substantiate it, the answers start varying wildly and the truth gets clouded.
Honestly, it's just best that you take our word for it that we are very, very smart intellectuals, and let's just all move the fuck on.
Exactly. And while you're at it, you can also take our word that each week millions of our adoring listeners write to us or stop us in the streets or find us in our homes when we're sleeping and terrifyingly shake us awake to ask us, Colin, Michael, how can I be as smart as you?
To which we say, probably not gonna happen, bruh. Our brains are like next level shit, man. But you can appear to be smarter.
To which they say, okay, yeah, tell me how to do that then. And so that's what we're going to do.
Sure.
Michael and I are going to teach you how to appear smarter.
Mm.
We've scoured the internet and pulled a number of common techniques people use to appear smarter, and we've compiled them here for you so you can get all the benefits of seeming intelligent without having to waste your time learning or growing as a person.
You know, a lot of people say they talk about putting makeup on a pig as if that's a bad thing. But personally, I've found that I've become quite attracted to and had long physical and sexual relationships with a number of pigs only because of the really good contouring they had.
Yeah. And so that was just a short detour of Michael explaining his sexual history with pigs before we get into how to teach you how to appear to be smarter.
But there is some sort of connection there that I can't get further into without getting confused and implicating myself for crime. So, Colin, should we give them some of these tips?
Yeah, let's. So we got a bunch here. I say let's just pick them and start picking them
sure,
out.
Sure, sure.
So one of the tips to appear smarter is to teach yourself stuff.
Great.
So,
be an autodidact, as it's called.
What?
An autodidact. So that's a term I taught myself.
It was like working on cars or something?
Close, Colin. You're working on yourself. So if you were a car, you were the auto person for that car, but instead you're didacting your auto. So you are, it basically means you teach yourself something.
Okay. And I also do call my bedroom the auto zone. So.
That's true.
Yeah.
Now, why is that? Because it's always muffled.
Yeah. I do. I did put up a lot of soundboards.
Okay, great. That keeps it all there. Another one that I like is wear glasses.
Oh, yeah. Now, so have you had any experience with wearing glasses to appear smarter?
So much so. So my eyes are bad and getting worse. And so I wear a pair of glasses around to see. But I found that people still treat me like an idiot. So I've started wearing 2, 3, 4 more pairs of glasses on top of those, on the back of my head, around my neck and a little chain like a librarian.
You are currently wearing what looks like a Rambo-style sash that he would keep.
A bandana. Bandolier.
Yeah,
it's a bandolier.
But it's just filled with
Warby Parkers.
Yeah, exactly.
And I have one monocle, but I can't tell you where it is. That's naughty.
Another tip that you can use to appear smarter is use your middle initial. Yeah. So
I do this a lot on my website. It's themichaeljwolf.com.
Oh, you okay?
And I go by Michael J. Wolf.
Yeah, and
sounds a little smarter.
What I do is I have a lot of middle names.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And so I just use, it's sort of an acronym in between my name.
Okay.
And it spells out Michael. And so then I just use that. So it looks like Colin Michael O'Brien, but it's actually Colin M-I-C-H-A-E-L O'Brien.
And that each one of those is a name.
Is a different
that
name.
You got. That's cool. And that definitely makes me think you're smarter and not, you know, an insane person.
Yeah. George R.R. Martin, it worked for.
That's true.
Yeah.
And so. It's just, it adds a little bit of sophistication, an air of, I don't know, maybe it harkens back to the days of kings and queens, esquires and all that. Here's another one. Believe in yourself. If you can't be smarter, at the least you can do is believe that you're smarter and have that confidence. That'll knock down doors. That'll really open a lot of pathways for you that might not be there otherwise.
Have you had any experience where believing in yourself, Michael, has enabled you to achieve something?
I held my breath underwater for 15 minutes. The lifeguard said it couldn't happen, and the doctor said I was dead for about 14 minutes underwater.
Did the lifeguard say that it couldn't be done, or did the lifeguard ask you not to do it?
A little bit of both.
Okay.
To be fair, I was also a lifeguard at this time, and the first lifeguard, Ruth, said, "Hey, help me save some of these kids." And I was like, hard pass.
And then you said, "I'd rather hold my breath underwater for 15 minutes."
Right. And Ruth was busy saving some toddler. And at that point, I had dropped my SpongeBob popsicle into the pond I was guarding lives at. So I went down there, started licking it, and the rest is 15 minutes of history.
Wow.
Everybody gets their 15 minutes of fame.
Another tip to appear smarter, they say dress for success.
Ah, this is a big one.
Yeah, that's why I always like to wear no less than 10 gold medals around my neck.
Mm-hmm. Your posture is awful.
It is terrible.
But you look very fancy.
Basically, I'm dragging my head along the ground as I walk.
Yes. You know that chart of the evolution of man? And it starts sort of this hunched over primitive Neanderthal. Colin has sort of furthered that chart to where his head is down right by his toes.
It's kind of more of a bell graph at this point sort of goes,
your spine is a parabola.
Exactly.
And I wear no less than a 5-piece suit. And the first three pieces are pretty normal. The fourth piece is a bandana that I wear around my head, Rambo style, kind of completing that look.
Mm-hmm.
And the fifth piece is, of course, a diaper. But a fancy.
Outside the suit?
Yes, outside, because I already have my under diaper.
Mm-hmm. I like to wear those, what are they're like the vests you see a lot of like the interns on Wall Street or like the business.
Like the Patagonia.
Yeah, I like to wear one of those outside my tuxedo whenever I go to very.
Just to say you're casual, you're making deals, trades.
Exactly.
Now, Colin, here's one that I like. Ask questions rather than statements.
Ooh, that's a good one. That'll come in handy because.
Do you think it is?
Well, what do you think, Michael?
I really am more interested in what do you think, Colin?
Well, I guess I'd have to answer that question with another question. Any thoughts on that yourself?
How smart do I seem to you?
How smart do you think you seem?
So, that just sort of was a riveting intellectual conversation
exactly.
And not an improv 101 game.
And I also, I like to sound smarter by just... if you ask questions, you seem interested, which makes you sound interesting. So I like to insert myself into groups of people that I do not know and just say, hey, what's going on here?
Aggressive.
Yeah.
Just coming in and they're immediately like, oh, what's this guy's deal? I do that on dates where I try to make it as much like a job interview as possible. A lot of questions, not a lot of eye contact.
Yeah.
And I rarely, rarely give any of myself.
And because
that's for marriage.
you do bring your resume to each date.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, because I'm very impressive, and I also want them to know that I have excelled in Microsoft Office Suite.
And, So those are just some tips. Yeah. Do you think we covered them all?
I think we covered enough to make it a full segment.
Great.
And now here's somebody who I would certainly love to cover in segments of hugs. It's our reader for the day.
Wow.
We're so excited.
And they are also, they appear very smart to me. Yeah. To
no
bring
glasses. But that doesn't mean that we don't think that he's smart, because we do. And now this person was, I don't know if you're going to believe this, was their high school class president.
And a budding creative young writer.
Yeah, had this dream of creative writing, kind of took a stab at it that I believe defined a little bit of his high school life, and is now coming around to attack that dream from another angle. And so we thought at Literati we would give him that chance.
We always like to support people who are following their dreams here on Literati. So please welcome Mike Kelton, everyone.
Wow.
Yeah.
You guys.
So
oh
glad
my
to
God.
Have you.
Thank you. I feel like I did just pick up a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. And these are just tips you can take wherever you go out into the world. Do you do anything to appear smarter?
I do ask a lot of questions. Mm-hmm. I love asking questions. Mm-hmm. And now I'm realizing
maybe...
Oh,
is that true?
You know what? Why do you ask?
Yes, this is fun. We're back into it. We're back into the questions thing. I find that you've got a very inquisitive nature. You're always rubbing your chin in a way that just sort of says, mm-hmm. I've either got something on there that I need to get off, or I've got a deep thought that I'm trying to rub out.
It's true. I recently had a physical and the doctor said, what's wrong with your chin? And I said, I don't think anything. And he goes, well, you've rubbed some of it off.
Yeah,
and
it looks
like, oh, okay.
What is a there's
first
a,
person to give themselves their own clap.
Isn't there exactly. the bull in
Wall Street?
Wall Street. There's the
ass is gone. Too many people have rubbed it.
Yeah, is it the
Seriously?
Ass or the testicles that people rub?
I mean, it depends on the day. Depends
yeah.
on the day.
Yeah, it depends.
For
I
good
think,
luck, you rub the testicles.
But if you're just mad, you just rub that ass.
You just rub that ass. That's
you gotta
true.
Rub that ass.
Gotta rub that ass.
Yeah,
which
you know,
is also what I do when I'm thinking. Not the chin. Yeah. I rub
my Well,
ass.
You got
rub
the seat removed from your chair, so you can reach underneath and just rub.
Yeah.
So, Mike, what are you here for today? Tell us a little bit about you.
Let me tell you something, you guys. I think I really love creative writing.
Okay.
It's and the best.
It really is the
so
best.
So good.
But you can't really be wrong.
Exactly. There's nothing you can do that's wrong when you creatively just let it flow.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think there was a time in my life when I was going down that journey of being a creative writer.
Yeah.
And it just so happened that I ran for president in ninth grade of my high school.
Wow.
And I decided to write an allegory as my speech. And I remember reading it to the class, and they were so confused that I won and I became president of my freshman class.
That's amazing.
Stories can be a powerful tool.
Very powerful.
And you learn that at such a young age.
Such a young age.
Yeah.
That's what's great with allegories and metaphors and analogies is a really good one just befuddles the mind.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
It throws too many things in one place so you don't really know what to follow, and it just gets the mind churning and trying to figure out what the fuck is going on.
And that's exactly what I felt like people were doing. As I looked out into the audience as a 14-year-old, I just saw a bunch of faces of other 14-year-olds going, what the fuck is going on? And then I knew as I walked away, I was like, they're all voting for me.
You had it in the bag.
Mm-hmm. If there's one thing I want to hear from a 14-year-old, it's a... Mm-hmm. Thick allegory. It's just a real confusing, probably pretentious. You know, I'll share a true fact about myself from my high school talent show.
Oh
this
my
is very
God,
true.
I'm
my senior year,
this already.
I decided to play a Bob Dylan song on guitar because a lot of the current Foo Fighters music that my peers were listening to, I was a little bit above. So I said, I'll play some Bob Dylan, but I didn't want to play one that people liked or enjoyed or knew. I played The Lonesome Death of Hattie Carroll.
What?
An
my
8-minute-long song about, you know, racism in America. And I was pretty nervous.
And a fixed trial.
Yes, and a whole fixed trial.
And like the just sort of the
injustices of
society. In our society.
And my peers hated it. And pretty much everybody except one of my friend's dads who came up to me afterwards and he said, nice job, kid. It's a deep cut.
I
immediately left the auditorium and drove home.
I really hope that whoever took the stage after you at that talent show played Everlong by the Foo Fighters, and it was just raucous applause. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, pretty much everybody else did pretty well because they were just fun and being themselves. And I thought, I want to use this opportunity to really show them.
I really want to ostracize almost everyone.
I want to turn the mirror on society in this high school and shine a light on racism in America that I really had a unique viewpoint to.
Sounds like you
did
it.
Through the words of Bob Dylan. Well, let's just say that I'm not friends with a lot of them now, so I did do something.
That ultimately is the goal of higher education.
Yes.
To get to a place where you're not speaking to anyone you went to high school with.
Yes.
So in a way, you won.
It's true. It's true. Now, Mike, you aren't reading that speech today.
No, I'm not. So that speech was about... it was about a family of sponges that lived in an oven. Okay.
And, okay. Yeah, I'm already lost and a little mad.
Yep. And that's exactly what you should be feeling. Mm-hmm. And then one day, one of the sponges, number 13, because the mom had too many sponges and she called them numbers, not names.
Was this this wasn't a children's story that you wrote?
I guess it was for kids in a way, you know, if you're a bunch of sponges living in an oven, that feels very kid friendly to me.
Yeah, that does. And also a little scary
there. Yeah, could be. Well, also ovens are only scary if they're on.
That's true. That's true.
Yeah, otherwise it's a cupboard.
Same with roller coasters.
A lot of people keep their shoes in them. I've been finding out recently.
A lot of people keep their shoes in their ovens.
I did not know that.
Because no one's cooking in New York, so they just use it as a closet.
That's true. Roller coasters are also only scary if they're on. Otherwise, it's just a bench with friends.
And that's true.
Yeah, that's true.
A lot of things like that. Anyway, that wasn't really what the allegory was about.
No, vibrators are only scary when they're on.
Yeah, those are really scary when they're on. Yeah. Anyway, so that allegory really got me to be class president. And I ended up making the freshman class around $600 that year from some bake sales.
That's not nothing.
Which is not nothing.
That's not nothing.
No.
And then I left that school to go to Performing Arts High School in the city. And left them with us. I was like, this is yours.
So you took a turn in away from the written arts into the performing arts.
I think when you find your true passion, your instinct is to run away.
Mm.
And I ran away from my creative writing passion, and I have not revisited it until earlier today when I sat down and I wrote something that I think is really gonna tickle your spirits.
Oh, that's great. Michael and I did the same thing with dirt biking. Our true passion, we just had to run away from it.
Yeah. And
now we're here.
It's too powerful. Yeah. But I'm so excited for this reading. It's always fun to get a fresh one. I hate when people, you know, when they've been sitting on it too long, and it's nice to get one that's, you know, to use a word that's been bandied around a lot today, fresh out of the oven.
Fresh out of the oven.
Like a pair of shoes.
And or a sponge.
This, or a sponge, fresh out of the oven. This is fresh out of the oven. It's called... the initial title was Status of the Quo, and the new title is Sheba the Beer. Sheba of Nazareth, they called her. She was a goddess, a witch, a wizard, a wife, a daughter, a cook, a sister, an artist, but most importantly, a cobbler. Sheba was born to Tarun and Kapik of Nazareth, two honest bakers, with not much more than a shabroof to their name. They had always dreamed about having a child, but goddess Shakira would not bless them with one. You see, a long time ago, Tarun made a grave mistake that brought a curse onto his family. Tarun was walking to town to fetch some milk for the chicken he was baking. He only had three shabroofs to his name, but unfortunately, a jug of milk was only one shabroof. So he brought one shabroof with him. As he approached the milk salesman with shoes on his hands for optimum pouring, Tarun thought he saw a bee and screamed. The scream caused a fright, and the milk salesman fell backwards into the well of milk, which had never happened in the history of Nazareth. All of the people in the market came running to help the milk salesman, for he was the most beloved milk salesman in all the land. No one would dare buy milk from the man outside the town with the shoes on his feet. It would be unsanitary and almost evil. The milk salesman continued to fall. That was a very deep well. The townsfolk all jumped into the well thinking it was just a few feet deep with milk, but they were all mistaken. One by one, everyone in the town fell to their death, leaving only Tarun standing in front of the milk well all alone. Tarun was so embarrassed, for he himself had forgotten to shave that morning, and his beard was in the shape of a dick sticking right up in front of his face. He had a weird hair condition where his beard would stick right up in the shape of a dick. You might think his beard was a hairy dick, which in fact, his current fiance, Kepik, loved. She sometimes confused his beard with his dick, and they would have very confusing romantic sessions in their bay window below the kitchen bed. Tarun was ashamed of himself. He, by accident, had murdered the entire town. He dropped to his knees as his beard dick hit him in the face, and he began to weep. He cried out for goddess Shakira. Shakira! What have I done? Where will I go? Who will I be? When will I be? Where will I be? When I learn how to be, why is it me? Why can't I breathe whenever I think about you? Where have all the cowboys gone? Why can't I? When will I? And before Tarun could finish his bellows, a strange but beautiful figure stood before him. It was hard to make out who that figure was, because she was shining like the sun, or a neon light you would find outside of a milk bar above the F-stop in Carroll Gardens. Hello, Tarun. It is I. Whoosh. Tarun couldn't hear the name because the being was mumbling through it. It's weird. So Tarun asked, who is it? The being answered again, but this time with more gusto. It is I, Idge. Tarun still could not understand. It almost seemed like the being was having trouble pronouncing her name. Tarun asked one more time. Wait, who actually are you? The being became furious. How dare you question me? I am the all-knowing, the non-prophet, the end-all be-all, Edge. Tarun stood still and literally could not make out the name. He asked one more time. Wait! What is your name, though? With that, the being rose up in the air above Tarun, now trembling in confusion on the ground. Those who question my identity will be cursed, and so I shall curse thee. You, Tarun of Nazareth, will be cursed to never bear a child. You may bear a bear, but never a child. And with that, Tarun walked away, slowly picking up apples and other food from the market on his way out of town. She really needed that food. She was so hungry. Tarun ran home and never told his fiance because he feared she would never marry a man that could only bear a bear. To Tarun's surprise, Tarun and Kepik ended up getting pregnant and having a child, a beautiful baby girl named Sheba. Sheba went on to live a normal life in this town, with nobody in it. The family went on baking and selling nothing because everyone was dead, until one day on Sheba's 16th birthday, when a royal family marched into the town. The Cassidys, they called themselves. The Cassidys came in and took over the town with their incredible weapons. Guitars, drums, beautiful voices, a triangle, a Bermuda triangle. The Cassidys hired Tarun, Kepik, and Sheba to run the food court at the castle. But one day, on Sheba's 18th birthday, something happened that changed literally everything. Sheba was out on the porch looking onto the land with no one there, and she saw a bright glowing orb approaching the city. She wanted to scream, but she was frozen. The orb came closer and closer until it was hovering directly next to her. She finally was able to speak. Who are you, beautiful and bright light? The being answered. I am the great and powerful, all-knowing Sheba couldn't understand the name and asked again. I'm sorry, who are you? It's me, silly child, the great and all-knowing Still, Sheba couldn't understand, because honestly, the being wasn't really saying much. And if she was, it was kind of silent. Or maybe she had a speech impediment or something. Regardless, it was whack. Sorry, I can't understand what you're saying. The being became enraged, and her light got bright until the light began to burn Sheba's skin. Sheba began to scream. But honestly, what is your name? You never really said it audibly. The being got angrier and burned the girl as if she was on fire or in a microwave or on Naked and Afraid and was left on an island in the sun for 7 days without sunscreen. Sheba laid on the ground unable to move, and the being realized what she had done, and she floated away in shame. After hearing the commotion, Tarun and Kapik came running onto the porch to find their beautiful daughter in a burning ball on the ground. They began to weep. Who did this to you, Sheba? Who? Sheba had not many breaths left, but mustered what she could. It was... Who? It was Ba... Sheba was beginning to make out a name. Who? Tell us. Sheba took one last breath. It was Paula Abdul. Tarun and Kapik screamed and cradled their daughter and sobbed. But with her last breath, Sheba's body began to change. The form began to morph. Sheba started to look less like a girl and more like a bear. No, wait. Not a bear. A beer. Sheba became a beer. And that's the story of how Sheba became a beer.
Hey, everybody. This is the B-Man, OBW, from the World Record Podcast. And I'm here to let you know that me and my co-host, the A-Train, a.k.a. Hershey Hellman, took over Office Hours live this week. We came into the studio. We made it our own. We wrecked the place. I stole one of Tim Heidecker's guitars. So check out Office Hours live on your podcast app of your choice or at youtube.com/Office Hours Live this week and see what happens. Or go to worldrecordpodcast.com and you can watch the videos or join the Patreon, patreon.com/worldrecordpodcast. Enjoy the show!
It's showtime!
Wow. Oh my goodness.
Absolutely incredible.
I am at the edge of my seat.
I just want to say, we were talking about if you can confuse someone with a story, you can get them to follow you. And let me just say, I will follow you anywhere.
To the ends of the earth.
Yeah. Oh,
thank you.
We should make you president of Literati, much like you were president of your freshman class.
Wow. I think that's true. And also that would help because he could take falls for any tax crimes we come under.
That's true. That would be, that would help a lot.
Okay.
Mike, I have so many questions. First off, how did it feel getting back into creative writing after all of these years?
It felt really confusing.
Sure.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it? Which word goes next?
I kept thinking to myself, is this right?
Mm. And then which way does the pen go?
Yeah, which way do I write? Which way should the story go? Mm. What will people really latch on to in the story? Is it a story for adults? Or is it a story for children?
Mm. Or maybe it's sort of like a Toy Story where it's like the kids can get it, but also there's something in there for the adults.
Exactly. Or Toy Story 4.
Which?
Well, I don't know. I haven't seen it yet.
I haven't either.
Have you seen it, Colin?
Toy Story 4?
Yeah.
No.
Okay.
I haven't.
Well, then I guess we should stop talking about it.
Well, I mean, it is topical. Like to I mean, we can talk it, a little bit about it. Just we can,
I would
just have
Toy
something
Story 4
topical.
Is yeah. It's probably good.
It's good.
Yeah. I guess we can all rate it. I'm going to give it a probably good.
Okay. Probably good.
I'm going to say fantastic.
Oh.
Wow.
So, Mike, I want to say that not only are you clearly an amazing writer, but you're also an amazing reader. A lot of the guests we have on come and they read stuff they've written, which is proficient, but the way they read it is like, oh, it's like if a dictionary grew legs and a mouth and just was, and you had a real music. I could tell the performing arts background in the way you spoke it.
A lovely blend of your talents.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I really appreciate that.
How did you bring it to life?
I like to put myself in the shoes of the character that's coming up.
Yeah.
Mm. So I can say to myself, oh, I'm not in it yet, but I will be there. And what would I like to experience as a character coming up? So the milk salesman, I say, what do I want to feel like in a little bit? And then I kind of read it for that perspective.
Yeah.
Oh. And so, like, what kind of shoes would the milkman?
Yeah,
we're
talking Vans.
So Skechers,
Sperry's.
It's funny you say Vans because I first pictured Vans.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And then I landed back at Vans.
Okay.
And so, yeah, the milk salesman had Vans on his hands.
The like the checkered ones that ska kids wore?
Exactly.
Oh, that's so cool.
So cool.
Mike, is this story supposed to be in the Bible?
Yeah. A lot of, I mean, I was picking up on some references that led me to believe it, you know, was referencing the Bible. Nazareth, Shakira, Paula Abdul, lots of things that are like, okay.
Milk. And Shakira is all over the Bible.
All over
especially
the Bible.
Especially the Old Testament.
The Old Testament is all Shakira.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I guess
that was one of the commandments, right?
One of the commandments was thou shalt Shakira.
Your hips shall not lie.
And that one too.
Yeah.
Two of the commandments were Shakira specific.
Two of the Ten Commandments are Shakira specific.
And should we just name the other eight while we're at it?
Yeah. Sure.
Okay.
Yeah. And just these are from the Bible we're
these
talking
are
about?
These are from, yeah. The Bible's commandments. One is thou's hip shalt not lie.
Mm-hmm.
Two is thou, what was the Shakira one? Obey Shakira.
Thou shalt obey Shakira. Okay.
It was like,
I think that's one of them.
Wasn't there one like anywhere, something? No, one where she was
I know everywhere. The one where it's like thou must tell their mother and father what's going on in your life. Do that. Thou shalt not murder anybody unless you feel like it.
You
can get away with
it. You can't murder unless you feel it.
One of the commandments is to command an audience.
That's true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's true. The sixth one I think is keep rhythm. Try to keep it on beat, on tempo.
Mm-hmm. How many are we up to?
I think that was six.
Seven.
Six or seven.
That is one of them, too. It's never miscount the commandments.
Yes, that's the seventh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Eighth one is obviously do not covet thy neighbor's Shakira albums on vinyl, CD, or Laserdisc.
Mm-hmm. I think Laserdisc was actually Martin Luther in his 95 Theses.
The reference.
He took that out.
Yes.
I remember that.
It's one of the big splits.
Yeah.
He said, no, not the Laserdiscs.
Yeah.
And they said, why? He goes, don't ask me. I'll translate it into German.
Mm-hmm.
And then he did.
And more power to him.
Yeah.
More power to him.
And then, you know, the other two are boring ones, so we can skip those.
Crank up the volume.
Okay, yeah.
Crank and let's turn this mother out.
Yeah, sorry, those were the last two.
I'm glad
we didn't skip them.
And those are famously the most boring of the commandments.
They just are they're written in the end. They're in italics. So was your story the Bible?
You know, come to think of it, that was probably the Bible.
Thought so.
Yeah, we thought so. I want to know, I have so many questions. We're really big into process. So
that
leads me to my next question. Mm-hmm. What was your process for writing this?
I like to be quiet. I like to sit and be quiet with myself.
Yeah.
I like to just kind of get, you know, go inside. I like to connect with everything around me and kind of let the story tell itself is really my process.
I like to get high,
and
personally.
That's pretty much the same thing.
Yeah.
If I connect, I'm buzzing off of everything around me.
Whoa.
No, tell me about that.
Well, it's like if I sit here and I touch this table, you can actually pick up on energy from the table.
This table.
This table from IKEA.
Yes.
It's polyurethane. I believe it's a Formica top. Okay. If you say so.
So I get high off of touching the table.
Colin, what do you get high off of?
You know, sometimes touching tables, but like also, you know, I like heroin.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Pills I find around the house.
Yep.
Weed if I'm not feeling exciting.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
That's a Monday through Friday drug for you.
And then, I guess just touching tables. I like to touch a table.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Everyone should try it at least once.
Do you use any substances or get high off anything when trying to create Michael?
No, I'm not a criminal.
Wow.
I like to obey the law and I like to respect my body, which is a temple, mm-hmm. albeit a temple with a few more chunky parts than I'd like. It's not, you know, one of those straight up and down temples. It's a temple with some curves. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. A temple with a couple of love handles. Mm-hmm. But no, I would never do drugs. And if I did, I'd turn myself into the cops.
Would you go right to the cops?
Yep. Directly to the cops.
So you would take the drug.
I would
and
speed dial the cops, then take the drugs and tell them. The cops would already know, so they would be mm-hmm. on their way by the time the drugs were hitting my tongue.
That's so interesting, because one time I was about to do a drug.
Cool.
And
I
then,
mean bad.
And then I called the cops. Mm. But I called the cops on a friend who was driving a motorcycle down the steps of a walk-up.
Only in New York.
And the cops said... Are you high? And I said, yes. And then I got arrested. Can you believe that?
I'm not sure if this story is true or another fiction that you've crafted, because it feels like it could be either. Well,
I'm touching the table right now.
That's the thing with you creative types, of which Colin and I are also creative types, is that it's like, where does the story end?
You want to have a bit of mystery. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like with Hunter S. Thompson, you hear all these crazy mm-hmm. stories, and part of you is like, this can't be true. Some of this stuff, like they talk about his drinking and drug regimen each day, and you're like, this can't be true. But then there's something about him that you're like, maybe it's true. Yeah, maybe it's true.
There's always a little bit of your brain that goes, that could happen
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
with
mm-hmm.
everything.
And if you remember something, a memory is fiction. So we think a memory is fact. That's not true. A memory is fiction. The minute it's a memory, it's a story that you're telling yourself. And this I heard from a scientist. So if you're remembering it, it's already being editorialized. So that means that we're always telling stories.
You had a conversation with a scientist, or you read an article?
It was at gunpoint.
The scientist told you this at gunpoint?
I needed answers quick.
Oh, you had the gun.
Where did you get a gun?
So in the Museum of Natural History, this is one of the things they don't talk about a lot, but there are all these different sections.
Uh-huh.
And yes, you can't bring a gun in, but if you go to the section with old-timey artifacts, some of those artifacts are guns.
But also...
So I stole a gun and then I held up a scientist.
Stole a gun.
Yeah. Well, the reason initially why you stole the gun is because not only would you turn yourself in if you ever did a drug, but Michael is sort of a vigilante. He likes to go out looking for people
doing
drugs.
I'm a bit of a Batman without the costume.
But he will take his gun
and
he'll go around town and try to find people on drugs and bring them into...
Yes, a lot of people have been calling me a menace.
You do self-arrest.
Yeah, I do a citizen's arrest mm-hmm. of anybody who's...
I actually do love a citizen's arrest.
It's nice just that we're doing something for ourselves.
I agree.
Yeah. And specifically, I was in the Museum of Natural History because I was trying to do a National Treasure movie sequel myself.
You were doing it yourself.
Like trying to steal shots, like guerrilla style?
I was just trying to solve a mystery.
Okay.
What was the mystery?
Where is the money that I need?
Oh. So that was more of like a mystery.
It was a personal mystery. Smaller uh-huh. stakes, but still for my life, very big stakes.
Did you think there was money in there for you?
Have you seen National Treasure?
I honestly have not.
I have not either.
I bet I would love it.
Basically, long story short, Nicolas Cage uses American artifacts to find hidden treasure.
Serious?
Yeah. Back of the Constitution is a map to treasure. So
is
if
that
he could
real?
Do that, then what do you think's on the foot of a woolly mammoth at the National History Museum?
What is on the foot?
Well, what I found out is that it's an alarm system rigged up to the rest of the museum that calls the cops on you. Even if you're trying to do a good thing.
Michael also heard the term skeleton key. And so he thought if he goes to like where they have like the dinosaur bones and stuff, that all those bones are keys to stuff.
That makes sense to me. I would think, honestly, something very similar.
Yeah. And what do you give the National Treasure movies? So we got Toy Story. You had Fantastic.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. National Treasure movies, untouchable. That's my rating.
Untouchable.
So, Mike, I had a couple more questions. What does this story mean? Like, is there a moral or a message? Is it an allegory?
And before you say, Michael and I just want to say, we got it. Yeah, but just okay. for the listeners. Like,
I got
yeah.
it.
Totally.
Yeah, for we sure. understand.
I felt that you guys were on yeah. board the entire time.
I was nodding so hard that my chin bruised my neck.
Mm-hmm. And now you know what it feels like to have a part of your chin.
Yeah, missing. That's true. That's
yeah,
true.
You have a bruised Adam's apple.
Yes, I have a big welty yeah. Adam's
bruised,
apple.
Bruised fruit. Right.
Bruised fruit. Yeah. Bruised fruit, Adam's yeah. apple, yeah. welt.
Yes.
Yeah. So.
So yeah, what does it mean?
I'm
what
glad. I'm really glad you asked this because, yes. you know, after I wrote it, I put it away, and then I opened it back up. And then I read it again and I said, what is the message here? And then I thought to myself, I know what the message is. The message is.
Mm-hmm. That's what I thought.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Yes. And that is such an important thing for young writers to know is if you're going out trying to make art specifically to say something, it's going to be cheap. It's going to mm-hmm. be hacky.
I'm not Banksy.
Yeah. The message, the moral that should not, shall not be spoken.
Yeah. Let it just be unearthed. Let each person bring their own thing to it. You know, that's why I like impressionistic paintings. Mm. If you're going to do a painting of an apple, I look at it, I say, it's an apple. I get it. If you're going to do a Banksy, like you said, of two cops beheading a flag, then, you know, I get that immediately.
And Michael does go through the museums and if he sees like a tableau of a piece of fruit, he'll go, that's an apple. I get it. And he moves on to the next one.
On.
He's like,
you
know. That's a naked lady having a picnic. I get it. Moves
I
on.
Get through museums very fast. Yeah. But when you get to the impressionistic stuff, the Monets, the Jackson Pollocks, even some of the Jasper Johns. It's about a feeling. It's about, oh, here's a strange mixture of light and color. And what do I see in it? I see my mother's penis. And exactly. But each person sees their own
now
thing.
Now we're talking.
Yeah.
That to me is what I want people to think. I want people to be listening to my story and go, what does this mean? This is my traumatic experience where I ate a piano as a child.
And I key by key?
Key by key.
Oh.
And all of my teeth
yes.
fell out. And now I have teeth that are made from shark skin.
Wow, shark skin. That's amazing.
And that's what, that to me, that is art.
So I
art,
was going to say Brushmore, but now that I know that it's shark skin teeth, I'm saying wow.
There's actually a lot of people walking around with shark skin teeth.
Wow.
And you don't know it, but have you ever looked at a picture and been almost blinded by a smile?
Oh, no.
Okay, well, then you have
blinded.
Not seen you have not seen shark skin teeth.
Okay. I've been almost blinded by a corner of a frame painting.
That almost hit
yeah.
you
yeah.
during a move?
During moves, I sometimes get too close to the paintings.
You're a very close wall walker?
Yes. Yeah.
That I've been blinded by the light.
Okay. That's very similar. Light is a very similar consistency to shark skin.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
So if you were actually to travel to the sun and if you were able to find some kind of suit that allowed you to be on the sun,
yeah.
you would land on it and go, wow, this feels like shark skin.
Okay. Wow. That's interesting. That feels wrong, but I trust you.
A sun suit. Yeah. Oh, but maybe this conversation is now entering the realm of art.
Yeah.
Is the conversation, why does a conversation have to move linearly? Why does it have to have a point?
Right,
you know?
Or an arc, or why would exactly. the people asking questions need to prepare some sort of trajectory for the interview to go in? Maybe that's on the listener to bring their own life experiences to it, and if they don't, then it's on them for not having a rich enough inner life.
It is their fault.
You weren't prepared to listen to this podcast. Mm-hmm. You can bring your own experiences to our podcast. Why should we have to bring ours every time we come here?
I was going to say, if anyone didn't get anything from it, my suggestion to them would be to stop everything right now.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Take a second to yourself.
Or two.
Or two. And restart the podcast.
I would love it if people would restart the podcast or listen to the other ones.
I find that this one, it makes more sense if you've listened to every other podcast and rated, reviewed, and subscribed.
That would be, that to me is why we're here.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as you said, time is a constant square.
And
I never said that. And, but you inferred it.
I did infer it.
You inferred it.
And now, speaking of conversations that might go over people's heads and, you know, being smarter than the average person, Michael and I today are trying to help our listeners appear smarter. Mm-hmm. And one of the ways you can do that is by, you know, improving your vocab or incorporating certain smart sounding phrases into your everyday speech. So
I love that.
So it's like putting a nice pair of bifocals on a pig.
Yeah, or a Patagonia on top of a tuxedo or exactly. something.
So do you want to try your hand at, we can take turns, kind of, we'll throw out some of these words and just seamlessly incorporate them into our everyday conversation.
Yeah, or we can take a stab at saying a sentence that incorporates these. So I guess the first one, use the word jocular instead of funny.
Okay.
If you want to sound smarter. So you can say something like, it was very jocular when the fat man's pants fell down.
See, now I'm looking, Colin, what a smart guy for you.
Very
that
smart man.
Language.
Right? Yeah. Do you want to take a stab at either that one or if there's another one?
Yes, sure, for sure. I was so jocular that all the inmates beat the shit out of me.
Oh.
So you were so funny that they beat the shit out of you?
Yeah.
They attacked you because you were funny.
There's a bigger story there, for sure.
And then I'm sure some of the other inmates found that very jocular.
They did.
Yeah, well, everybody was laughing.
They were joculating the entire time.
Do you want to try one, Mike?
Sure. Hey, read this Snapple cap. It's quite jocular.
That's really
good. I like
that
a lot.
That's really good.
I like that a lot.
I've got one last one. I was a jocular in high school.
Okay.
So.
Mom, don't come in here. I'm ejaculating.
Good. Yes. Suddenly, like, these are all really intellectual conversations I'd like to be a part of.
I may be laughing and semen's coming out of my mouth.
Semen's coming out of your mouth? As you're laughing?
Yeah.
Sure.
Okay. Either way, Mom, don't come in.
Don't come in.
I guess another word you can try to incorporate is assiduous, meaning, you know, working tirelessly or diligently. So, you know, the entrepreneur has to be assiduous to succeed would be an example. Does anything come to mind for anyone as a...
I assiduously ate 10 burritos in a row and then threw up.
I love that.
Yeah.
It puts a lot of work into something that is enjoyable for three or four.
Yeah. And it makes me seem, again, sophisticated.
Yeah. Uh-huh. I was very assiduous in my training and then I won the pie eating contest at the county fair.
That's similar to mine.
Very similar. A little similar. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. That's good. I like that.
I guess I would say, sorry I'm late. I'm very assiduous today.
That's good. That's good one. That's a good one.
That's a good one.
I have another one.
Okay.
I assiduously collected all 50 state quarters. Spending my entire
really
life savings
and
on them.
And it's not just words, it's also phrases you can use. The phrase I'd like to broaden our discussion. So you could say something like, you know what, this is very interesting, but I'd like to broaden our discussion. Let's talk about how cute cats are in addition to puppies. You know, and then you sound very smart.
I'd like to broaden our discussion. So let me bring this broad in. Everybody say hi to my mom.
Oh, yeah, that is really fun.
Yeah. Yeah. She's not going to be able to make it.
She's not coming?
No, she's not coming.
Okay, well,
she's at a denim convention.
Really?
Yeah. She's collecting different types of denim.
What city?
Detroit.
Oh, yeah.
Denver. Denver's funnier.
Oh, yeah. I knew there was one happening in Detroit. I didn't know there was one happening in Denver.
Yeah, it's nationwide.
Oh, wow.
All the biggest cities.
All the big cities are doing denim conventions.
Yeah, it's true.
Well, I was going to say, look, I'll pick up another Tic Tac, but first I'd like to broaden this conversation.
Again, I'm like, ooh, I'm in that scene. I'm seeing Mike looking at this pile of Tic Tacs ready to pick one up.
And you're like, I'm going to have one of these. But before I do,
Let's broaden the conversation.
Mm-hmm. And then I'm going to have a Tic Tac.
Because in my mind, someone just said, why don't you pick up another Tic Tac? And like, I said, not yet.
I'll get to it.
I'll get to
it. In my own time. Mm-hmm. Yeah. First of all, why don't you broaden the conversation?
Broaden the conversation.
Yeah. Here's one. Saying it was more of a blunder than a failure. Sort of, it sounds smarter and sort of softens the blow, any mistakes you might make, apparently. So you could say, you know, like a Chernobyl was more of a blunder than a failure.
Yes, exactly. You know, my parents say I was more of a blunder than a failure when they found me in that blender.
Mm. Okay, I was going to say...
yes, please.
I was going to say... well, a feather is actually not so much a pen, and it was more of a blunder than a failure.
Again, another crisp. I'm like,
so good.
You set these up in a way where I'm like, there are people debating these things.
Yeah, and I think there's one last one.
Oh, wait, I had one more blunder.
One? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was more, this is from my own life. It was more of a blunder than a failure when I got kicked out at the Thunder from Down Under show in Las Vegas for touching the dancers.
Yeah, that is quite a, I would say
it was
that
more
teeters,
of a blunder than
it
a failure.
It teeters on full-on failure.
Teeters. Well, that's another word you can...
teeters yeah. totter, but yeah. they won't... get me out of jail any sooner.
And then finally, one thing you can say, you should say yes when. It makes you sound smarter. This is something you can use at work.
I love
when your boss needs you to do something. You say yes when, and it sounds like you sound assure of yourself, and you sound like you're going to take initiative.
So are you asking when is it happening? Or are you saying,
I don't know, like, this one,
yes,
I'm
when.
Not sure. It should be incorporated. This is,
if I
nor
say,
does it make
if, I, if your boss says, I need you to get this done for me, and you say, yes, when, it sounds like you're being assertive.
Proactive, assertive.
Exactly.
To the
so
point.
Now I think it'll start to make more sense. I'm going to ask you, I'll ask
Great.
You both a question.
Ready.
Great.
And you answer, okay? Would you both like to go to the Hanson reunion concert with me?
Yes. When?
Exactly. So you sound smarter.
Yeah. No, that's true. I felt smarter, too.
Because it's like you're doing two things at once.
Yeah.
You're
yeah.
agreeing and then also scheduling.
Yeah. And then I'd also like to just say July 16th, and I've already got us all tickets. So cool.
See, that was smart of us to say yes when, because I hadn't bought my tickets yet. So now we have tickets with Colin.
I will
do you think
also
they're going to do Mbop?
If they don't do Mbop, you have to get your money back.
Okay.
If you go to a Hanson concert and they don't sing Mbop, I will freak out.
And okay. And the thing is that they all, you know, they're also going to like push it to the very end.
It's,
they're not going to come right out.
The
and
second
do it.
Encore.
Exactly.
For sure.
Yeah. And so that sort of like raises sort of the anticipation. Like, are they going to do it? They have to do it. They're not going to not do it. Right.
I mean, I went to a Robin concert where she did not sing Show Me Love. And I swear to God, I left and I was so mad. I was so mad.
Did she call your girlfriend, though?
Of course.
Okay, then I'm happy.
No, you're not. So, because if she doesn't sing, no, like,
we don't have.
Show me love and what it's all about. Yes, when. And you know what I just did there?
Yeah, you incorporated our smart phrase and you made yourself seem very smart.
Let's open the discussion.
Mike, thank you so much for joining us today. You yourself have a podcast on Forever Dog, is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Well, what is it and when can we be on it?
I have a feeling getting you two on it would be so hard, but I'm willing to do
the work.
No,
not really. We're not doing anything else.
I mean, because it's a spirituality podcast about diving into my own spirituality.
Do you want to do it later, like after this recording? Because we can just stick around. We have another guest, but we can bump him. We're desperate. Nobody on Forever Dog has asked us to be on the podcast yet.
Are you serious?
Well, Brett Davis did, but I don't know if that was for
that
us
would make
or that
me,
nobody
I,
else could do.
That
this.
Would make me mad. I would be mad at that, and I'd like to open up the discussion.
Oh, man.
I'll figure out a way to have you on.
Mike,
I'm going to figure out a
let
way.
Let me tell you, Colin and I are not just trying to, you know, stretch this out as long as possible and make it awkward for the point of comedy, we are forcing you to amend your schedule to incorporate us, okay?
Yeah.
That's what I want you to take away from today.
That's fair. I will say that's fair.
Can I say thank you for bringing the pop chips?
Well, you're welcome.
But I could not eat them because we were recording and I was scared we were going to crunch.
I know.
But it has been an absolute pleasure. We love you. And I think we can sign off and then I have a special treat.
Okay,
that
great.
Can play us out. Okay, great. Ready?
And that's the end of that chapter.
Oh, yes!
Mm.
All right.
But seriously, whenever you want, we're on. I was raised Irish Catholic. My dad's Jewish, so there's a lot I could get into. Went to a Jesuit college.
Guardian Angels?
Okay, yeah, maybe I'm not right for this podcast.
More like Guardians of the
Do you have
galaxy.
A Guardian Angel? Because then we can talk.
I don't, sadly. I have a little Guardian Devil.
Okay, maybe season 3.
Forever Dog.
This has been a Forever Dog production. Executive produced by Brett Boehm, Joe Cilio, and Alex Ramsey. For more original podcasts, please visit foreverdogpodcasts.com and subscribe to our shows on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Keep up with the latest Forever Dog news by following us on Twitter and Instagram @ForeverDogTeam and liking our page on Facebook.